45 minutes, and today features a powerful new speech given this week in Berkeley by journalist, activist, and political analyst Phyllis Bennis. At 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman speaks with legendary local writer Ursula K. Le Guin about the new edition of her book Steering the Craft, a 21st century guide to sailing the sea of story. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, the guest is Robin Cost Lewis. Her new collection of poems is called Voyage of the Sable Venus. First, though, it's Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. Chris Andre is coming up next on KBOO. And thanks for listening to KBOO, and thanks KBOO members for your generous support in our recent membership drive. You can still contribute by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
KBOO Community Radio is seeking an individual or group to contract with to help build our next 3-year strategic plan. KBOO embodies equitable social change, shares knowledge, and fosters creativity by delivering locally rooted and diverse music, culture, news, and opinions with a commitment to the voices of oppressed and underserved communities. We've been serving the Portland community since 1968 and are one of the oldest independent community radio stations in the country. The person or group who is selected will co-lead the development of a strategic plan with the KBOO Strategic Planning Support Work Group, made up of volunteers, board members, and staff. More details about the application process can be found at kboo.fm/planRFP2015.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Thursday, October 1st, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. We have a lot to do today. Big changes. I want to mention, however, that yesterday was a historic day for the world. Maybe not so much Israel and the United States, who have staunchly avoided participating in global security and global justice for the Palestinian people. Other nations on earth have supported Palestinian membership in the world community. Yesterday, the Palestinian flag was proudly flying over the United Nations. And I do want to get that said first. The other, closer to home, down in Coos Bay, FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Committee, has signed off on Jordan Cove. This comes at a time when TransCanada has announced that it was revamping its Nebraska strategy in an effort to build a Keystone XL pipeline. That's another way of saying they're backing down. There's been a huge opposition from unexpected places in the heartland. That said, we are going to be also speaking with George Edwardson. He is the vice president of the Inupiat community of Alaska's North Slope. That's up in the Arctic. And the community that that George represents is under threat of disappearing forever, language, culture, tradition, because of the warming of the seas. Good morning, George. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Good morning. It's Inupiat Community of the Arctic Slope.
Thank you. Thanks for clarifying that. I wondered if you could speak a bit to our listeners about the threats to your community from oil exploration, from warming seas, and from the degradation. I think people forget that when the sea warms, the land warms, it's impossible to carry on with traditional activities, food gathering, which of course is part of traditions. Talk a bit about that, would you?
Okay, you understand the concept of, you know, the ground freezing and the water and the moisture piling up on the land, what you call an ice age, what you would call an ice age. When all that can freeze gets on top of the land, the sea level actually does get lower. And I'm 68 years old right now, and the place, the lake that my community used to get their drinking water used to be a mile away from the coast, and now it's right in the middle of the town. And I'm just 68, and just the past little over 50 years, our shoreline has receded better than a half a mile.
That's horrifying. That's horrifying. How does that change things?
It's normal.
How does this change things for you?
It changes things like, okay, my coastline has receded in my lifetime more than a half a mile up and down the whole coast from the Canadian border right down to the western part of Alaska. And this raising of the sea is natural. It's a normal thing, just like the sun comes up every day. You know, it's a 24-hour period, except when the sea level goes up and all the ice melts on the land and goes in the ocean, it takes 18,000 to 30,000 years. And that's natural and normal, too. Except this community I live in, we have a place we call Umiat. That means boat, a skin boat in our language. And that place called Umiat is where we have stories where a whole whaling crew drowned when a whale was struck and it tangled up the lines with a whale while it was twisting, doing its death roll. And the whole crew drowned. And that place is 150 miles away from the coast of the, you know, away from the town, inland.
That's...
And so when all the ice melts, this community is going to move up there that far in. And it's something natural.
It is.
When the first sailing boat came over 100 years ago, they took a GPS reading, not a GPS, the sextant reading on location, longitude and latitude, where the point bearer was, where the tip of North America is. They took that reading in the 1800s, in the mid-1800s. And now that place is over a mile to the south of where it used to be. And then I took the same reading 50 miles down the coast to the west. It was the same thing again. It had receded a mile. And then another reading they took was 150 miles to the west, and it had receded the same distance too. So it's a normal, natural, you know, thawing.
That's interesting to us. That's very interesting to all of us, because we have concerns about changes brought about by use of fossil fuels. George, thank you so much for that. We are out of time. We've got our next guest is waiting. Thank you many, many times. We're really honored to hear your voice and have you on the show today. Anna, thank you so much for that. My guest has been George Edmondson. He's the vice president of the Inupiat community of the Arctic Slope. Thanks again for that, George. We appreciate your time. Next up, we have, if you haven't heard, this is October 1st, and what that means is that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has signed off, even though they concede that there are going to be environmental problems. They think that those problems are not going to be significant. The trouble is that fails to take into consideration the fact that we don't have, once these problems begin, we have no control over where they will go or how they will expand or how what they will do to an environment that's already under threat from a massive, extraordinary wildfires, that putting a pipeline with natural gas through an area susceptible to fires is such a bad idea. It's hard to imagine anyone who's even looked at the problem casually could possibly make a mistake like this. Joining us today is Frances Etherington, one of the most knowledgeable people on the subject with Cascadia Wildlife. Good morning, Frances. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Well, we're delighted to have you back. You were, when I heard this, you were the first person I thought of. And then I thought, of course, of the activists, the Hike the Pipe people, and all of those. Alex also will be able to join us today, so we're going to have a conversation. I'll let you two hold that down. Alex, of course, is one of the main organizers of the entire Hike the Pipe, and the main hiker of the proposed Jordan Cove 232-mile pipeline path. Good morning, Alex. Thanks for being with us as well. Frances is on the line. The two of you, how could FERC justify the decision? Given that we've just had this whole big deal on another radio station about earthquakes and subduction zones, and the fact that it's not if, it's when. We've just had the worst wildfire season in history. What are they thinking?
Well, FERC doesn't have to really justify their actions. They have to claim that they've looked at the environmental impacts and say there's no significant impacts. But what they really do is they rubber stamp. FERC is simply just a rubber stamp organization that works for industry, especially now that industry wants to export liquefied natural gas, LNG, fracking. And all the fracking wells that have been going on have produced a lot of natural gas. And the owner of the Jordan Cove project claims that if they can't export, in this case to China, they'll have to reduce fracking. That is their whole purpose and need for this insane project.
Is to increase fracking. Alex, what do you see happening when they say that they're going to be environmental problems ahead? They don't say what those might be. Why are they reticent on that subject?
Well, I would just add again that the FERC is set up to be a rubber stamp. Anybody who doesn't know about FERC should look them up and do your own research, because it's quite a fascinating governmental agency. But essentially, they look at the environmental impacts, they minimize those impacts in their analysis, and then they deem those impacts worth the risk because of the trickle-down economics. There will be corporations that get money from this project, and that will spur investment. And their argument is that that will benefit the public interest. So these environmental harms to the public, which are very severe, they are saying are worth the benefits that will come to these corporations.
And these are, we're not even talking about American corporations either. What about the issue of eminent domain and how that affects landowners along the path of the pipeline?
Well, yesterday, the federal government, the arm of the federal government that's in charge of this, that's who we've been talking about, FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, they issued what's known as a FEIS, a Final Environmental Impact Statement. And what that really is, it's their final recommendation to the commissioners to make a decision on this project in December. So what they recommended was to go ahead with eminent domain on somewhere between 300 and 700 landowners impacted by the 230-mile-long pipeline. The company has given preliminary offers to those landowners, and they are extremely low ball. Like, you're aware that they want to use almost 8 acres of my property, and they offered me just over $2,000 as a one-time payment. And this is the type of offers that they're giving to everyone, and our offer was accompanied by a fact sheet on how eminent domain works. and they're going to get it from FERC, and they'll take us to court when they get the final certificate in December. So many Oregonians are under threat. Now, Alex will know a lot about that as he walks. He met many of these landowners on his walk.
Alex, what have you heard from the landowners?
I've seen a lot of frustration, a lot of skepticism of the process in general, because these decisions are being made without any kind of knowledge of what's happening on the ground. They're being made by people in far-off places such as Washington, D.C., or Alberta, Canada. And these landowners feel real mistreated because they're not being listened to. And the communication that's going on with them, a lot of it is in legal language. And so these landowners, when they get these letters about eminent domain and about how much their property is worth and all that, they aren't necessarily able to navigate this complex legal language. And they feel entirely alienated from the process.
Final thought from both of you. We are totally out of time. I want very much to have both of you back. There's a lot more to talk about here. It's a lot more to say to people. What can people do? December, maybe we can stop it with the commissioners.
People can ask our governor to say no to this. Our governor has the power to say no. So Kate Brown should be lobbied to say no to this project.
Alex, your thought?
Yeah, I would totally agree. Kate Brown is the one to target.
Okay, great. Thank you both so much. We've been speaking with Frances Etherington with Cascade Well, and we've been speaking with Alex, the organizer of Hike the Pipe. Thanks to both of you. This has been Air Cascadia for Thursday, October 1st, 2015. Engineering for us today, Rock Bergeron. Thanks, Rock. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Flashpoints, we feature a powerful new speech by author, activist, and fellow